I guess I've always been like that. I loved DJing because I could be in the corner of the room. Nobody cared I was there. And I was controlling the dance floor. And you're only controlling the dance floor if people are dancing. So the balance is like giving people just enough that gets them, that they're kind of familiar with, get their trust, and then take them as far away from that as possible. And notice when they may be a bit wavering, and then bring them back. But the basic thing is like, it can only be super exciting if I'm excited. And if I'm not doing what I want to do, then I'm not being true to myself. This is exactly why I'm in that position, to take control of my experience and deliver it to you. So I think that idea exactly of what DJing is how I've kind of treated my life.
Richie Houghton, who turned 50 this year, is an electronic musician and DJ who has not only been on the forefront of techno since the late 80s, but has also created some of the most innovative and immersive live acts in the world. What makes Richie different from other DJs is that for the past two decades, he's not only been controlling the music, but also every little detail of his show. From visuals to lights and effects, in real time. This is the story of an introverted kid who became the first DJ to fully manufacture a unique live act experience like nobody else before him. Throughout the past 33 years, he's used technology and innovation to remain on the forefront of electronic music and proved that a DJ can be so much more than just a human jukebox.
Bringing everybody in sync into a certain moment through music or through music and visuals and lighting can be really a powerful thing. And being in control of that moment.
I'm Niklas Jansen, co-founder of Blinkist, and this is State of Mind. Join me on discovering some of the most fascinating and accomplished people in the world. We'll explore how the amazing skills, the attitudes, the habits, and victories are a product of the state of mind. In this episode, recorded in October 2019, we'll explore how Richie Houghton used innovation and out-of-the-box thinking as a powerful tool to stay on the forefront of a highly competitive market. Richie Houghton was born and raised in Banbury, a small historic market town in England.
I moved to Canada when I was like 9 years old. And at that point, I became much more introverted, and it was a really strange alien place. I remember being a kid and being happy to be the kind of the odd one out, or wanting to be different. If you're doing something different and people don't understand it, if that's what they're criticizing you for, maybe there's something good in that.
There is Rich, the intellectual, the technologist, the tinkerer, the engineer, the nerdy, introverted tech guy. And then there's Rich, the imp of the perverse, the gremlin, the troublemaker, the extrovert.
My name is Joshua Glazer. I'm a music journalist who specializes in electronic music and especially techno.
I've always been very curious. And I remember even when I was, like 7 or 8, I even had like this thing of wearing all black for a while because nobody else did. So I'm a kid that wants to do something different than the rest of the people in the room, or at least feel like I'm doing something different. But so it was always me looking for new things to keep me interested. I remember having a VIC 20 computer or Commodore 64. There was some early software that you could make bleeps and blops, and I was programming kind of really basic video games. A Commodore 64, the SID chip, was basically a synthesizer, super sophisticated. And so you could really delve into some early synthesis and create, yeah, really like video game music, which is kind of the forerunner of techno. When I was 7, I always remember going to my mom and dad's bedroom and wondering what this cool poster was that my dad had hand-painted on the back of their bedroom wall. And that was the cover of Dark Side of the Moon from Pink Floyd. I think at one point I realized that a lot of the music that I liked and maybe that my dad had been playing had a huge electronic component to it. My dad was, or is, a huge music buff, and I grew up with him taking electronic pieces of equipment apart and building, you know, modifying his turntables or his reel-to-reels, and then when he got something new, he passed it down to me. So there was music and technology and Kraftwerk playing in the background.
Being the introverted tinkerer, Ritchie felt comfortable with machines.
That's why I say I think technology kind of leads, and technology was what allowed me as a kid to communicate to people. First by using bulletin board systems and programming, and then later through music. That's when technology really became a bit more of my companion and my voice. And whatever I did with the technology or whatever I typed on the bulletin board systems, whatever, it was still some kind of connection to another human. So I think the human has always been the most important. But that really, you know, for kind of an introverted kid who felt very comfortable with technology, it made the whole world in a different place. I think that curiosity is what helped me find electronic music and technology. It's something that kept changing, and that just kind of kept pulling me along. Through technology, I could fully control an experience. Like, I didn't have to rely on anybody else. I could sit in front of the computer and type away and make the screen flash in different colors or have some synchronized music to that. Then later, as I got into electronic music, I realized that through that same technology or similar technology, I could be by myself in the studio and make a whole composition and just make it happen yourself was incredibly exciting.
Ritchie started to make music and quickly became part of a new emerging music scene that was arising on the other side of the tunnel that connected his hometown Windsor, Canada, to the city of Detroit. Here's Joshua again.
I first met Rich in the mid-1990s, probably around 95, 96, and he already had a reputation within Detroit as kind of being one of the top DJs.
From the very beginning, Richie was finding new ways of playing music live. He didn't want to be just a human jukebox. He wanted to express himself creatively in front of the crowd. So he very quickly discarded a DJ's most iconic tool, the turntables.
So that's why I actually decided to jump from turntables straight over that and go completely digital, because it was a completely new way of playing, which for me unlocked and offered a whole bunch of new possibilities and felt exciting and innovative and was a new form of performance.
Ritchie started to digitize all of his records and was able to blend music in a completely new way, in real time.
He was really dissecting the records and taking bits and pieces rather than just playing one record, then another record, then another record, which is the traditional DJ model. He was literally taking the, you know, this drum loop and this bass line and this little synth melody and your various snippets and putting them together before the consumer technology became readily available.
But Ritchie didn't stop there. For him, a live performance was not just about the music.
We hosted Rich's Millennium Party on New Year's Eve 2000 at a club I was working at in Detroit called Motor. And it was very important for Rich doing a party in Detroit on this special occasion to not have it be the typical club that people were used to coming to. As a result, he only, you know, he agreed to do our big Millennium Party, but only if we completely remodeled the club. And we literally spent 3 days decorating the club from you know, the ceiling to the floor, inside, outside, completely redoing the entire venue. Part of that was building a special DJ booth that was going to, you know, that was specially constructed so that Rich could bring a lot of extra equipment, a lot of extra gear. He was known for having 3 turntables, a 909 drum machine, and then an effects unit, but he wanted to go even further. But, you know, to do all of it in service of not just, you know, not just experimentation, but in service of creating this truly memorable event and memorable party.
This urge to create highly elaborate live acts quickly put Ritchie on the map. But he still wasn't satisfied. He wanted to keep pushing the limits of what a live show could be.
I did this, you know, Plastic Man live concert in 2004. And the whole idea was to be able to do a live show and have synchronized generative visuals. And we worked on it for months, up until really like one hour before the performance. We were still programming and hacking the system.
Ritchie played Plastic Man live, which is very rare.
That is Stefan Charles. Stefan created the Time Warp Festival in 1994. Since then, he's developed countless stage shows for live acts. And he's been a strong ally for Ritchie and his very ambitious imagination.
Time Warp is probably the premier annual techno event in Germany, and it's one of the top 5 or 10 techno events globally that happens every year. And I remember seeing his setup, and I mean, he literally had somebody custom build a touchscreen so that he could manipulate sound and image and in a way that was not previously capable.
We were sure we were going to make it, and we were so in it that we just didn't realize that if we'd actually just dialed back our expectations, we would have already blown away everyone in the audience. But we actually pushed it too far that we didn't deliver on the expectations of the audience. It generally was a failure, and it was like partly we were too ambitious.
For Ritchie, the 2004 show was a frustrating failure. The question is, why?
In our world of electronic music, we never heard from that performance being a super failure. I think Ritchie's expectations at the end of the day, what he wanted to deliver, were higher than what the people actually expected from him. And I think besides him, nobody really realized that it was a failure because nobody knew what to expect. He tried to do Plastic Man Live 2004, and he did it with a new technical setup, integrating with new programs, controlling lights and stuff, which for him didn't work out. And then he said he buried the project for a couple of years until he's sure that the technology and the team and himself is right to do that.
Not every idea can happen at the moment that you think it should happen. You know, there's ideas that you can bring to reality now, and then there's other ideas that you want, and you just realize that they don't work. Either it's not the right moment, the right timing, the technology isn't there, the right, you know, the people aren't correct around you to make that happen. So it's kind of deciding what feels right, what's possible, and then putting other ideas to the side and letting them incubate, sometimes not actually actively thinking about them. So like 8-9 years later, we like hit it out of the park.
It seems like Richie was disappointed that the 2004 show was nothing more than a spectacle. He missed being able to express himself in real time, feeling the moment and communicating with the audience. He was missing the connection to the crowd, to another human, the very thing that has made him passionate about innovation from the very beginning.
What you saw happen in the past 15 years is a lot of the big electronic music artists created these massive visual shows to accompany their music. The problem is, in creating these large, you know, kind of visual spectacles, they had to give up most of the spontaneity within the music, because syncing the visuals to the audio required a fair degree of they had to be coupled in order, just from a technical perspective, and you can't break from that. What Rich has been able to do, particularly with his current show, is to basically separate those things again and create a visual palette that is adaptable to whatever he chooses to do sonically. He's basically up there creating the music, and then his team is following what he's doing to a fair degree with the visuals, and it's spontaneous enough. He can do whatever he wants in that moment. And that's been, you know, sort of a major breakthrough.
It's a performance which goes beyond the mixing, even which goes beyond music.
Richie realized that to create a unique show and deliver his vision, he needed to build a team.
In 2004, that was the first year where he said, like, look, can we work on the visuals somehow together? And how can I get a little bit more control about what is going on? He realized basically that if he really wants to get control over this performance, you have to build your own team, and then you have to tour your own team, and then you have to rehearse with your own team. And that's what he started. He was bringing a team together, his own sound guy, his own light guy, his own VJ guy. They were rehearsing together. They were really like a band. And this is the way he wants to perform, you know, like he's constantly innovating.
But it's exactly that situation that I love. You know, it's like kind of being on the edge of your seat of, okay, is it all going to work? Where are we going with this? What kind of situation can I put myself in with technology to keep me feeling that intensity and that energy that brought me into this whole thing in the first place? That's what I love about DJing. You know, I can play music that I just received 1 hour before. I'm playing it for the first time, and people are hearing it for the first time. I'm putting it together in a different way that it just, it's like, that's that kind of futurism that I feel in performance. You know, jumping into the unknown, any moment where you can really kind of pull the rug from beneath you and change the things around you creatively, that can be super important and super inspiring. It may be not create exactly what you expect. It may not be the end of the new development or the new change, but it's going to take you somewhere.
He's in many ways akin to the Salvador Dali of electronic music, wanting to go that extra mile, figure out something new, figure out something different. And I think this is the case with a lot of innovative people. I think he definitely has that sort of antenna where he finds the innovations that are happening, identifies their potential, and then sort of shepherds them to the next level.
Without a doubt, Richie Hawtin has taken LifeX to whole new levels, constantly swapping traditional tools for new, innovative technologies, like when he dropped the traditional turntables to go fully digital. And then he realized that his vision required the assistance of a highly skilled team, both creating innovative hardware and also collaborating with him on stage to create a breathtaking show.
I live and breathe technology and electronic music. You know, since I found that in the 80s, I was like, I'm going to do this. Getting into creative uses of technology, you know, the thing that is pushing and changing and developing, if you're not up for the task of like staying up to date, then maybe you shouldn't be in this.
As software and computers became more and more sophisticated, DJing has become a lot easier. Anyone with a laptop can mix music in front of a crowd. But Richie is not just standing on stage, pressing a button, letting technology take over to create a spectacle. He's not letting technology replace the human component. He's using technology in order to bare his soul in front of our very eyes. Maybe that's why this 50-year-old DJ, after 33 years in the business, is still at the forefront of electronic music.
Any great performance when, you know, you kind of jump onto the wave or off the wave or off the building. You know, you're up there with the technology, you have your records or you have this idea, and then at one point you've committed to it and then you have to do it. And getting into that flow where it all starts to work seamlessly, you know what's happening at the moment it's happening, and you know what record to play at the moment that record needs to be played. Like, it doesn't happen all the time, but like when that happens, or if you can set the system up for that to happen, it's beautiful. Bringing everybody in sync into a certain moment through music, or through music and visuals and lighting if you're in a concert setting, can be really a powerful thing, to like let yourself go and forget everything. Trying to create the possibility that a moment like that could happen. And being in control of that moment.
New episodes of State of Mind airing every Wednesday. State of Mind is a production of Invisible Media and Blinkist. If you want to learn more about how one person's creative vision can make a significant impact within an entire industry, check out our episode with Erica Lust, an adult filmmaker named one of the 100 most influential women in 2019. Thank you, Richie Hawtin, for taking the time to talk to us. Also, a big thank you to journalist Joshua Glaser and Time Warp's founder, Stefan Schatz. If you like what we're doing here, please take a moment and support us by subscribing to the show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, CastBox, or wherever you get your podcasts. Got Instagram? Follow Invisible Media for all the latest news and a behind-the-scenes look at the making of the show. The handle is @TheInvisibleMedia. I'm Niklas Janssen, your host, and this is State of Mind.